Shamanim Devi Bhagavad Gita.
So for most
December
of everybody here, today
8th.
Is going to be a big surprise. Because today is the eve of a big holiday tomorrow, which is the day that is the appearance day of Sri Bhagavad Gita. It's the day that Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna on the battlefield 5,000 years ago. So tonight and tomorrow night, we'll try to cover the Bhagavad Gita, or be covered by the Bhagavad Gita, immerse in the Bhagavad Gita, half tonight and half tomorrow. Our Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness means to put forward Bhagavad Gita as it is. And most of us came to Krishna consciousness by the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll start from the beginning and let the Bhagavad Gita speak for itself. It begins with Sanjaya and Dhritarashtra. Sanjaya is the secretary of Dhritarashtra and the disciple of Śrīla Vyāsadeva. So here, Sanjaya is getting Divya Drishti, or transcendental vision, because of his surrender to the lotus feet of his spiritual master, Śrīla Vyāsadeva, who is none other than an incarnation of Lord Narayana, for manifesting all the Vedic literatures. Our Śrīla Prabhupāda compared this to having a spiritual TV in the heart, and you can watch anything from anywhere. So because of that spiritual vision that was given to him by his Gurudev, now in the next picture, you see that he's able to speak to the evil queen Dhritarashtra, something that's happening 90 miles away. Then it's no wonder that the gopis, who are so much more advanced than Sanjay, would be able to see Krishna with the eyes of their emotions when he's out in the forest and thus speak the rain of heat. So it begins. Sanjaya is speaking. Or Dhritarashtra is asking Sanjaya, please tell me what's happening on the battlefield. Dharma kshetre, guru kshetre, samaveta, yu sabha. Mama ka pandavaschaiva imakurva sanjayam. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjaya, having assembled on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, what did my son and the sons of Pandu do, being desirous to fight? The very question deeper than even Dhritarashtra could have imagined. Because the battlefield of Kurukshetra was a place of pilgrimage in time immemorial. And even the demigods would worship there. And it's a place of, therefore, piety. So by the influence of that sacred ground, there's no question of Dhritarashtra's son's winning. Then Sanjaya replied, O King, after surveying the Pandava army arrayed in military formation, Duryodhana approached Dronacharya and spoke the following words. Dronacharya is not the commander of chiefs. The what? He's the military guru of the Pandavas. But he also has a specific role in the army of Duryodhana. He taught the science of weaponry to both the Pandavas, Pandu and Dhritarashtra, and then to their sons. So Dronacharya was a little worried, so he went to Dronacharya and he asked, "Tell me who's on my side and who's dead to war on the Pandava side." Oh, Acharya, this is the Acharya of the Kurus. "Behold the great army of the Pandavas arranged in a military phalanx by your intelligent disciple, Drishtadyumna, the son of Drupada." Very intelligent disciple, Drishtadyumna means he's your disciple, but because there was some politics in the family, he went to the side of the Pandavas, and he's the one who arranged their military balance. Present in this army are the mighty bowmen, equal in combat to Arjuna and Bhima, my army, Duryodhana, such as Satyaki, King Virat, and the great warrior Drupada. Drupada is the father of Draupadi. Also present are Dhrishtaketu, Chaitanya, and many other warriors. All of these are Maharajis. That means that they could each fight with 10,000 elephants, one man. O best of the Brahmanas, for your information, I'm also mentioning the names of those outstanding warriors along with the commanders of my army. I'm telling you who's on both sides. In my army there are heroes like you, Bhishma, Karna, Kripacharya, Aswatthama, Vikarna, Bhurishava, all of whom are ever victorious in battle. There are so many heroes who are prepared to give up their lives for my sake, and all are equipped with various powerful weapons. Now when he says all of these heroes are prepared to give up their lives for my sake, he doesn't realize what he's saying. What he's saying is, they're going to give up their lives for my sake. They're all going to lose. So there's a lot of foreboding that are unknown to the speakers. Our forces, Duryodhana is saying, though carefully protected by Bhishma, are not sufficient. On the other hand, the army of the Pandavas, under the careful protection of Bhimsena, is fully competent. Therefore, you must all remain in your strategically assigned positions at the entry point and give protection to Grand Sire Bhishma. Although he's the most powerful of anybody on both sides, still, if he's looking one way, the enemy party can come from his back. So because he's the most important of our fighters, I want you to arrange, Dronacharya, arrange that he's fully protected on all sides. Then, Grand Sire Bhishma, the valiant elder of the Kuru dynasty, loudly blew his conch shell, making it sound like the roar of a lion, and thus delighted the heart of Duryodhana. Thereafter, conch shells, kettle drums, small drums, redundas, horns, trumpets, and various other instruments were suddenly sounded, creating a tumultuous, fearsome sound. Then, Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, with, I have to mention, blue ears. That's what Gurudev said, and that's why I painted them in that way. Sham-colored ears. Special horses. Blew their divine conch shells. Hrishikesh Sri Krishna blew his conch shell known as Panchajanya. Dhananjaya, that's Arjuna, blew his conch shell known as Devadatta. And Bhima, a performer of Herculean tasks, blew his great conch shell known as Pounder. Maharaj Yudhisthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell named Anantavijaya, and Nakula blew the Sugosh conch, and Sahadev, the five Pandavas, blew the conch known as Manipushpaka. O king of the earth, Dhritarashtra, who is the king of the whole planet, that great archer, the king of Kasi, the Maharaja of Kunti, Drishtadyumna, and the king of Bharat, the unconquerable Satyaki, and so on. They all resounded their respective conch shells from all sides. After seeing your son in military array, Arjun, this is again Sanjaya speaking to Dhritarashtra, after seeing your sons in military array, Arjun raised his bow, prepared to shoot his arrows. He then spoke the following words to Krishna. Arjun said, O Achyuta, infallible one, please place my chariot between the two armies, so that I may observe who is desirous of fighting in this great war. I want to see all the warriors, the well-wishers, and the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra who have assembled here. O Bharat, Sanjaya said, O Bharat, that means Dhritarashtra. Having thus been addressed by Kudakesh, Arjuna, Krishikesh, Kudakesh means it has some significance. Kudakesh consists of two words, Kuda and Kesh. Means that Gud, guess what it refers to? Gud. You know what to eat. And Gur embodies all sweetness. Acacia exhibits the sweet taste of the rasa of perfection. So acacia refers to guna avatar. It talks about guna avatar, it doesn't apply to our Jew. How can these parts of Guna avatars manifest their Aishwarya or superior power of opulence before a person whose order was followed at a frame by Krishna, the crest jewel of all avatars? So Krishna, Arjuna being called Kudakesh, means he's receiving the affectionate sweetness from the source of all guna avatars. It's interesting. Gudakesh. What does the Kesh mean again? The guna avatar. So and guna means that sweet. So he's receiving the sweet affection of the source of all guna avatars. And then Rishikesh, Gudakesh and Rishikesh, is the master of all senses. So Rishikesh Shri Krishna drew his excellent chariot into the midst of both armies in the presence of all the kings and prominent personalities like Bhishma, Drona, and others. He then said, O Partha, Partha means the son of Krita, and Krita is the aunt of Krishna, the sister of Krishna's father, Vasudev, means they have Krishna and Arjuna in a very intimate, familiar relationship. Just behold this assembly of Kurus. Thus Arjuna just asked Krishna, please show me who I'm going to fight with. There, in the midst of both armies, Arjuna saw his maternal uncles, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, cousins, nephews, grandsons, friends, fathers-in-law, well-wishers. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, Prabhupada explained that when Krishna pointed out all the enemies, here's this one and this one and this one, just by pointing at them, he was reducing their duration of life. Arjuna just got the credit. So what happened? Seeing all of his friends, relatives, standing near him on the battlefield, Arjuna began lamenting. He became overwhelmed with compassion for them. We used to all hear this years ago. Arjuna said, "O Krishna, seeing all my kinsmen assembled here with a desire to fight, I feel my limbs weakening, my mouth becoming dry. And Maya is always calling us in this way every day. So my body is trembling, my hair is standing on end. My Gandiva bow is slipping from my hand, and my skin is burning. I'm unable to remain standing. My mind appears to be reeling, and I detect only auspicious omens. See that he's taking shelter of Krishna. O Krishna, I don't see anything auspicious that can arise out of killing my own kinsmen. Nor do I desire victory, the resulting kingdom, or even happiness." Get the question? I. What do I like? What do I not like? O Govinda. What does Govinda mean? It means one who satisfies the senses. So why aren't you satisfying my senses? But really the thing is, if we satisfy the Govinda's senses, then automatically our senses become satisfied. So that's the significance of calling the name Govinda here. O Govinda, I'm supposed to satisfy my senses. Of what use to us, our kingdom, enjoyment, or even life itself, if those for whom we desire them, when those for whom we desire them, that is, I want to, why do I want to have a kingdom? Why do I want to have enjoyment, or how can I have enjoyment? By showing it off to my relatives. So those with whom we want to enjoy them, they're the ones that are standing in as my enemies, and I have to kill them. Our uncles, sons, grandfathers, maternal uncles, father-in-laws, and so on, they're all standing before us in battle. In battle dress, ready to give up their lives and wealth. Therefore, O Madhusudan, even if they kill me, I still don't wish to fight with them. What's the significance of us calling Krishna Madhusudan? Can anyone say? By the way, for those in the back row, can you hear me clearly? Because somebody said that I sound like a bunch of garble from back there.
It's good.
It's okay? Always let me know if you start talking about it. So what's the significance of Madhusudan? You know, Krishna, your name is Madhusudana. Sudana means killer. And Madhu means the Madhu demon. I don't see you being called Nanda Maharaj Sudana or Vasudeva Sudana. So why are you asking me to kill my relatives? He's trying to friend me with it. Soon we'll see it's not working. Then he says, okay, forget it, just take shelter, surrender. Just tell me what you want, because I see that my way is not getting me anywhere. Remember those six symptoms of surrender in Jiva Dharma? And one of them is thinking myself insignificant, low, and wretched. And with that qualification, you can imagine what I'm going to desire, how bad it's going to be for me. Therefore, I think I'll just find out what you want and do that. So, O Janardan, giver of liberation, why are you going to be in this mess? If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, even for the sake of sovereignty over the three worlds, what to speak of this earth, what satisfaction will we derive? How can I be happy? Once when Prabhupada was giving the lectures on this, he said, Krishna said, no, you won't be happy. Your senses won't be happy. But I want it so you should do it out of duty anyway. And then you'll have the ultimate happiness of the soul. Because our senses are always screaming, hey, what about me? And the mind, what about me? O Madhava, husband of the goddess of fortune, where is my fortune? We will only incur sin by killing all these aggressors. Therefore, it is improper to kill Duryodhana and the other relatives. How can we be happy by slaying our own relatives? O Janardhan, giver of liberation, the intelligence of Duryodhana and others has been polluted by the greed to attain the kingdom. Thus, they are unable to conceive of the lawlessness that arises from destroying the dynasty, or the sin occurred by betraying their friends. So why should we, because they're like that, why should we be like that too? We have knowledge of the sin that's going to happen. We have knowledge that if all the leaders of the family are killed, then who's going to protect all the family members? If the husbands are killed, then the other bad guys are going to come and exploit all the women. And then there'll be unwanted population, and the whole planet will be a mess of unwanted population as it is now in Kali Yuga. So why should we engage in such improper acts? We know the future. But then, chapter 1. Now chapter 2. No, it's not chapter 2, sorry. Thus ends Gurudev's commentary on that verse. So we can read. Okay, so we're continuing. When a dynasty is destroyed, the ancient Dharma traditions of a family handed down through that dynasty are also destroyed. The heads, the religious heads of the family are killed, and who's going to protect the religious principles in the family? Naturally, they'll get into bad association, like with outside the Sangha. Even if you go through all the motions, there's going to be big walls and advancement. Like riding on a bicycle that's nailed to the floor, just moving, but you're not going. Without Sadhu Sangha. Upon the destruction of religion, the entire dynasty becomes overpowered by your religion. O Krishna, when the dynasty is overpowered by your religion, the women of that dynasty become degraded because of unscrupulous men. O descendant of Vishnu, when women become degraded, an unshaped, varna sanskar, unwanted population are born. Like Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, because the combination of the husband and wife at that time, that is Kardama and Kardama Rishi and Diti, because it was done at the wrong time without consideration of religious principles, they got like the worst demons you could imagine. And just by their birth, the whole universe became upset. The whole universe was raining cousin blood and big storms, the trees were falling down. Were those animals that howl at night? Were howling. Such unwanted progeny certainly forced hellish conditions upon both the family and the destroyers of the dynasty, indeed. Their forefathers bereft relations, and then, if everybody's religious, who's going to save all the forefathers and give them a better birth? So everybody can suffer. Right now, Krishna, you're making me suffer when your name is Janardhan, you're supposed to be giving me liberation. I've heard that those who abolish their dynasty's dharma principles suffer in hell for an unlimited period of time. Alas, how amazing it is that we're determined to engage in this great sin. You can see you get a big misconception about what is sin and what's not. If you follow Krishna, if you don't follow Krishna, that's sin. If you do, it's not. Like Prabhupada gave the example, if somebody's in the war, a bona fide war between different countries, and then you have the bona fide head, the general, the commander-in-chief, and they're all telling the privates what to do, and the privates are killing hundreds of thousands of men, they go home and get a medal. Then if they want to kill one man, at home, What happens? They get the electric chair. Why? Because it's unauthorized. So the authority is Krishna. Driven by greed for royal happiness, we're prepared to slay our own kinsmen. If the fully armed sons of Dhritarashtra were to kill me unarmed and unresisting on the battlefield, even that would be more auspicious than fighting with them. Then Sanjaya said, having spoken these words, in the midst of the battlefield, Arjuna's mind was distracted by lamentation. Sat down in the chariot, listening, standing, and listening together, and cast aside his cloak and outfit. O Govinda, I shall not fight. Now, chapter 2. Sanjaya said, Sri Madhusudan thus spoke these words to lamenting Arjuna, who was overwhelmed with compassion. What kind of compassion? For the body, the compassion of the Sudra, and whose restless eyes were full of tears. Sri Bhagavan said, O Arjuna, what is the cause of your delusion? Delusion means illusion. At this crucial hour, this is not at all proper for an Aryan, one who is born in the higher depths, and should know what is the real value, what is value, and what is no value. So we're either enhancing, let's take it spiritually, let's take it materially, let's take it ethically, anywhere we're going to take it, you're wrong. So we're either enhancing our reputation, nor lead you to heaven. You're worried about sin, you're worried about religion, you're worried about, you know, family, love. If you think that your relatives are going to think that you're so brave and compassionate, that you didn't fight, then ha-ha, guess what they're going to think? Look at that coward who didn't fight. You're not going to enjoy meeting him with them. Because for one, it's an honor, this honor is worse than death. O Partha, do not yield to this degrading incident. Cowardice. It does not befit you. Bend his petty weakness apart and arise in chastisement of the enemy. So Arjuna said, O Madhusudan, O Arisudan also means, you're the slayer of your enemies, not the slayer of your father and mother. How can I fight? Do I grant for me to fight? How can I fight with arrows in battle against grandsire of Krishna and Dronacharyas who are actually worshipful superiors? It would be better to maintain my life in this world by begging than to kill these great personalities who are my gurus. Even though motivated by material gain, they remain superior. So this is like mundane sentiment. It doesn't matter what my guru they did, he's my guru. And you know, the scriptures have said, don't commit offenses to your guru. After killing them, any worldly enjoyment I might attain would certainly be tainted with their blood. But of course, Purdey says in the purport, Gurur Nisya Swadhano Sasya Vikana Sasya Swadhani Nisya Sasya Daivam Nisya Namo Chayam. A guru cannot deliver his son, his guardian, his ward, his wife, his student. He's not really a guru. One cannot deliver his ward from the presence of death. He's not a guru. So Arjuna says, you know, I'm just, I just don't know what to do. I'm unable to decide what's better for me, to conquer them or be conquered by them. Even after killing them, we will not desire to live. Yet they have taken the side of Dhritarashtra and now stand before us on this battlefield. Having become now, this is very important. He's realizing. Krishna's giving an ear, he's speaking, but you know how sometimes when you speak to a good listener, the answers start coming out themselves, don't they? So now, hearing himself talk. Having become overpowered by weakness of heart, and bewildered about how to ascertain religion, I've given up my natural quality of chivalry. I implore you to tell me what is actually auspicious to me. I just really can't figure it out. I've got myself in a rut. You know how when you get yourself into a mental rut? I've got myself in a rut. I can't think, what should I do? What should I not do? Now, okay, I surrender to you. Now I am a cycle of soul surrender to you. Please instruct me. Now we'll talk with him again, just from this point. Before it was getting nowhere. Even if we obtain an unrivaled kingdom and prosperous kingdom on the earth with sovereignty like the demigods in heaven, I do not see any way to dispel this lamentation which is drying up my senses. Then Sanjaya said, speaking his words, Buddha Kesh, the chastiser of the enemy, said to Krishna, O Govinda, I shall not fight. And he fell silent. Now the real teaching begins. Krishna said, while speaking learned words, your mourning for not worthy of speech. For the wise man, neither for the living nor for the dead. Because never was there a time you worried about this person dying, that person. But never was there a time that I could not exist, nor you, nor all these things, nor in the future will any of us cease to be. Just as the embodied soul continually passes in this body, from childhood to youth to old age, so may the soul take another body at the time of death. O Kuntea, son of Kunti, my aunt, when the senses come into contact with an object, that's when one experiences deep, cold, happiness and stress. Such experiences are flickering and temporary. And therefore, we should learn to tolerate it, because the senses aren't real. They're not dictating reality. They're dictating their own karma. Well, best among men, that's the only person for whom happiness and stress and the experience of various sense objects are the same. Like he stands away back from them and just remains a neutral party. Who's not disturbed by that is certainly qualified to attain liberation. You want to know how to be liberated? Then this is how. Of temporary things, there's no permanent existence. And of the eternal, like the soul, there's no cessation. Those who know this truth have reached this conclusion by much deliberation. That which pervades the entire body, we should know that it's eternal. No one is able to destroy the imperishable soul. He who considers the soul as the killer or the killed, he's ignorant. The soul slays not, nor slain. For the soul is never any birth nor death, nor having one skin as he ever ceased to be. He's primeval, unborn, ever existing, ever youthful. When the body is destroyed, he's not destroyed. How would a person who knows that the object is eternal, immutable, indestructible, ever kill anyone or cause anyone to kill? So on the spiritual platform, you're wrong. This is a person who discards old garments and then puts on new garments. So one discards old bodies and takes new ones. The soul could never be pierced by any weapon, burned by fire, drowned by water, dried by the wind. But even if you think that the soul is repeatedly born and repeatedly dies, still there's no reason to be free. Because whatever is born, this is the law, whatever is born, death is certain, whatever dies, birth is certain. Therefore, you should not grieve for what's unavoidable. Don't cry out spilled milk. All beings are unmanifest before the birth, manifest for a short time, then unmanifest again. another platform. You're on this platform, you're going to lament. So get on a steady platform where you can be happy. Some look upon the soul as amazing, some speak about the soul as amazing, some hear of them and accept them as amazing, and others, even after hearing about them, they don't understand at all the soul. Now, okay, we just discussed the reality of the spirit. Now let's consider your duties. You're worried about not doing sin and doing your religious duties, so let's talk about that for a minute. Considering your duty as a Kshatriya, you should not hesitate, because you should know that there's no better engagement for humans to fight against this crowd, engage everybody according to their propensity. So, you're a Kshatriya, that's your propensity. The duty of a Kshatriya is to fight on these grounds. Fortunate are the Kshatriyas, for whom such opportunity of fighting comes of its own accord, by the will of Providence, and thus opens the doorway to heaven. The word is done south, the word is done heaven. On any count or two, you are wrong. All your considerations are wrong. Why? You turn away from what I want, not from what you right. Now let's see what happens if you don't just want to do it, okay? You're worried about what happens if you fight. I'll tell you what happens if you don't fight. You'll not only lose your status as a Kshatriya, but you will gain mental reaction by not fighting, not by fighting. People will speak of your infamy for all time. How do I know? Because I'm the source of past, present, and future. I make things happen. And for an honorable person, dishonor is even more painful than death. All these great warriors, like Suryodhana and others, they're not going to think you're a great, compassionate person. They're going to think that you left the battlefield out of fear. Conditioned souls can't understand others. Those who have always honored you so highly will now consider you as insignificant. How do you enjoy being with them? Your enemies will scorn you with harsh words while criticizing your ability. What could be more painful than you in all the world? If you're killed in battle, now I'll tell you what happens if you write this. If you're killed in battle, then you will attain Swarga, because it's a religious war, and there, on the wrong side, you're on the right side. And if you're victorious, then you'll enjoy the earthly kingdom. So stand up with determination and fight. Considering happiness, stress, gain and loss, victory and defeat to be all equal, fight. And this way you'll never incur sin. Now I've explained to you the knowledge of Sankhya, and now I will impart to you the science of bhakti, by which you become free from the whole bondage of the material world, which is just a stone battle. Endeavors on the path of bhakti yoga, which in English can mean bhakti, by the way, are neither fruitless nor subject to loss. There's no loss of diminution. And even a little progress, please one, from the greatest type of fear of going down to other species, you're sure to get a good next birth, even if you make a little advancement. O son of Kurus, the intelligence of those who are fixed on the path is resolute and one-pointed. But the intelligence of those who are versed in bhakti are many-branched and inconclusive, can't figure anything out, doesn't get anywhere. There's no conclusion except for Krishna, as he will be explaining as we go along. Those who are foolish reject the real meanings of the Vedas out of attachment to those ornamental statements which promise heavenly enjoyment, godly opulence, but which yield them a poisonous effect. Like they may be a tree with a lot of pretty flowers, but if you try and smell it, then it's really full of poison. Like somebody really wants to go to heaven instead of wanting to be bhakti and wants to come to me. Those departed contaminated by lust perform many proper ceremonies to obtain heaven, thinking these to be the highest objectives of the Vedas. The leaders who enjoy monogamy and such rituals bind their followers to the cycle of birth and death, and then, once you go to heaven, then if you don't invite them to the Vedas, then what's going to happen? You might come down to the grave and have to be born as a bride, and then they can invite you. Because you've done pious and impious activities, you have to suffer birth, both. But if you body, you become free for all things. So those who are attached to the divine monogamy, whose minds are captivated by creating happiness, do not attain a resolute intelligence for exclusive meditation on the Supreme. Rise above the molds, described in the Vedas. Become established beyond molds. Become free from all dualities of honor and dishonor. Give up attachment to profit and loss, and situate yourself in pure goodness, pure sattva. That means in pure bhakti. Use how to get that? By engaging your intelligence that I'm going to give you. Because Krishna said later that for anyone who's devoted to me, I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Just as all the purposes that are served by the small wells are served by the vast rivers, like Amitabha. Similarly, all the purposes that are served by the Vedas, which means going to heaven, getting into the lodges for that, are all served many times over by one who knows the purpose of the Vedas, which is there are different kinds of Vedas for different kinds of people, and the essence of the Vedas, which is that those Puranas promote goodness, and so on, that's accepted by our civil succession. They take us to the highest realm, the happiness in that highest realm includes millions of fold, millions of times, a little atomic happiness from heaven or Brahmananda, merging, you know, any other, how all the happiness in millions of universes together. You have the right to perform your prescribed duty. That's your right. But you're not entitled to the truth. Don't worry about the truth. Do it for me. I'm the enjoyer of the truth, not you. And also, don't consider yourself to be the cause of yourself, just be the instrument. Work under me. The Sanki will tell the verse, the Krishna says, what happens if you work under me and what happens if you don't? Ready?
English?
Loud.
Machita sarva durgani, matrasaram trishasi, atache tvam ahankaram, na shosyasi, vanankshasi. One who works in full consciousness of me can overcome all obstacles by my grace, but one who works forgetting me and out of false ego is totally lost.
So don't consider yourself the cause. Not allowed be attached to the truth. You are allowed to be the truth. But you're not allowed to think that you're the cause of the result, and you're not allowed to not be the truth. O Dhananjaya, in a devotional mood, give up attachment to the fruits of karma. Perform your prescribed duty and become equal foes in happiness and stress. So I've taken equanimity is called yoga. Or more specifically, Buddha yoga. The yoga of intelligence. When you're intelligent, the Buddha yoga and Bhakti yoga are the same thing. When your intelligence has crossed beyond the dense forest of illusion, you'll become indifferent to all that vacuum earth and whatever will be there on the material platform. You lose all interest. Then Arjuna says, and now he's listening. What are the symptoms of a person whose intelligence is fixed in samadhi? I don't hear about that. I'm interested. How does he speak? How does he sit? How does he walk? I want to connect with such a person. I want to meet such a person. So Krishna replied, When one gives up all material desires, which come from where? His flickering, silly mind. And when his mind does control, he becomes satisfied by the blissful nature of the self. He takes pleasure in himself. That person is understood to be of steady intelligence, not somebody in the material world who is smart. One is not disturbed by the threefold miseries. Dukeshvanvichamana, Dukeshvanvichasriha, Dikuratamaya krodha, Dikuratamaya krodha, Dikuratamaya krodha. This is one of the three verses which is deep in the heart of the world. The other one was Anadi. The other one was the thing who comes from Shishmishamana, and he wants to serve. One is not disturbed by the threefold miseries. One is not elated by his happiness, who is free from attachment, fear, and anger. This goes to stage of steady mind. So I'm not like that. Divide your faith and serve with that purpose. One is devoid of mundane affection, another rejoices in gain or despairs and loss. He's known to have a fixed intelligence. But watch out, because the rest of the senses, if you're in the world of senses, things show in the senses, the rest of the senses, even one of the senses in which the mind is absorbed, in steal away the intelligence, even of a man of discrimination is endeavoring to achieve liberation. Very dangerous place. Prabhupada said it's like walking in a field of thorns. If you're not so big in the world, if you're not so careful, immediately all your clothes get caught up in the thorn bushes and you just get all entangled. Very scratches the legs and it's all painful and you can't get what you're supposed to go. Stuck. Therefore, one of the Jewish senses, how? By surrendering to me in Bhakti Yoga, taking shelter of me. Only such a person is considered to be intelligent. So now we go down to the domino effect. I wonder when the audience starts at 5:15 tomorrow, because it's our last day of Bhakti Yoga. It's the Bhakti Yoga.
Or even 5.
Well, what do you all want to do? Because we're only in the middle of chapter 2. It'd be nice to get to the whole book. What?
Oh yeah, I'm going to go on probably on the 4.
Is that late? Because that's when everybody's out, right? Does that mean there's no class in that? Sorry, not.
Four to five.
Well, the thing is, they want to do it when there's a lot of people out. It's the exercise.
Unless we can go at 10.
What would you mean?
Can you go at 10? Can you go at 10?
Would you go at 10?
I can go in the morning.
Huh?
I can go in the morning if Shauna can go in the morning.
Is that good for everybody? Is that good for you? Is it right to make your own
music? I got my music.
Huh? What is it depend on? Is it depend on the time?
It's got five.